Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Movember Radio. I'm Osher Ginsberg and this is a weekly podcast focusing on men's health and the issues that men face today. Movember is a global community of over 5 million people. And each week we speak with someone from that community who's passionate about changing the face of men's health. You can subscribe to this show in the podcast app of your choice on SoundCloud or at movemberradio.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Say hello. Tell us what you think of the show. That'd be great. My two guests today are a legitimate full tilt power couple, Kirk Pengilly and Lane Beachley. These two have been together for 13 years. They were married in 2008, and it doesn't get much bigger than this. Kirk Pengilly is the guitar player and the sax player for one of the biggest bands of all time, INXS. Several multi-platinum albums under his belt. He's played more packed stadiums than I've had hot dinners. And Lane Beachley. Lane Beachley is a 7-time world champion pro surfer, and she's the only woman ever to do so. 6 of those world championships were back-to-back. Lane now focuses on her foundation, aimforthestars.com.au. I've known these two guys for quite a while, so it was really lovely to have a conversation with them. However, they have been through some tough times recently. In February of 2015, at 56, Kirk was diagnosed with aggressive prostate cancer. They went public with this information in June of this year, and today, Kirk and Lane share their story with us of what happened before the diagnosis, during the treatment, and how they've dealt with life on the other side of surgery. I cannot thank Kirk and Lane enough for being so very open, so very honest, and so very generous with this story. They're really, really special people. Kirk and Lane invited me into their beautiful home for this conversation, and I began by asking them to describe the Northern Beaches, the part of Sydney where they live.
In fact, the beach that we overlook is, well, said to be the
freshwater beach.
The first sort of beach that was surfed on by the Duke.
No, so it was where surfing.
Am
was
I telling
first,
you? Yeah. So I actually should get your, Lane, who's a surfer.
Your surfing history is not as good as your music history, shall we say?
Okay.
But it's the Duke Hanamaku came here from Hawaii and demonstrated surfing for the first time in 1914 down here at Freshwater Beach, and so the first Australian to surf with him was a woman named by Isabel Latham, and so the Australians were really introduced to surfing way back then. And there's a copper statue up there on the headland that we can see of the Duke.
There is too. And wasn't that the Australian swim team that met him at the Olympics and they brought him back?
Yes.
Because he was a swimmer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's an Olympic swimmer.
Yeah. Well, those guys, they were watermen, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What was your health and fitness regime like before you met Lane Kirk?
Look, I've always been conscious of my health. I've had a naturopath who's probably my best friend, I guess, he and his wife, besides my wife, Lane. and he's been looking after me since about 1988, I think. And I think probably maybe I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for his, you know, herbal tonics and remedies and things that I've been throwing down my throat for that long. So.
Right.
But, I went to the gym every second day back then. I've been going to the gym every second day for probably over 20 years. and, you know, fairly aware of what's good to eat and what's not.
And ignoring that.
No, I've never been a big sort of takeaway hamburgers and processed food and things like that. I've always cooked sort of up, fresh vegetables and meats and foods.
But what changed when you met Lane?
Well, my nighttime habits changed. Clearly I was nocturnal and Lane was dayturnal. So, in fact, on our first date, I happened to sleep over because my car was there and I couldn't drive at Lane's place.
It's an old trick.
Nothing happened.
And Lane's just shaking her head.
Yeah, and I woke up at, I don't know, maybe unusually about 7 a.m. or something, and Lane wasn't there. And I thought, this is what's going to happen. She's going to get up every morning and go surfing. And I'm going to wake up alone, you know. But
get used to it. One thing that did change was I lowered his beer intake because it caused monumental snoring.
Hmm.
And but also I noticed Kirk was eating a lot of carbohydrates unnecessarily as well. So just changed his diet a little bit. And he's always had a really good healthy intake of fruits and vegetables and a balanced diet, but sometimes there was a lot of pasta
and
a lot of gnocchi, a lot of rice.
Yeah, there was, so, actually, right.
Yeah, so we changed that, increased the protein, lowered the carbs, decreased the beer intake.
What shift did you notice besides the snoring?
weight loss, greater vitality. He embraced the sunlight for the first time in a long time.
I'd set foot on a beach.
Yeah, you set foot on a beach.
Got sand between my toes.
First time since you were about 14.
Yeah, I think so.
It was a gradual change.
But Lane's gluten and yeast free kind of thing. So that was something. Certainly, when we spent a lot of time together in two different houses for a long time before we actually took the plunge and moved in together and bought a house together 8 years ago. And so I think my diet's changed quite a bit because I do most of the cooking, and there's a lot of things that Lane doesn't eat, so that's kind of become part of my diet in a way as well.
So when the cat goes away, as in me, little mouse starts to eat all the things that
I don't. But if we go out, I'll have a steak because Lane doesn't eat steaks.
I don't eat red meat. I don't eat duck. I don't eat pork. I just eat chicken and fish, turkey and salad and vegetables. And even then some of the veggies I don't eat, like mushrooms and capsicum and eggplant and things like that. So
you guys do a lot to keep your body healthy. But what are some things? You guys have been together for quite a while through some fairly humongous things, both personally and professionally. What are some things that you guys do to keep your relationship healthy?
Communicate.
Yeah, definitely communicate. Absolutely. Interestingly, when the first half of the 13 years we've been together, we were both still travelling heaps. Lane was still on tour professionally and I was still touring with the band.
Absent speak with Hargrove on.
Yeah, so we actually spent a lot of time apart, which I think, was good in a way, because what we have done is we've allowed each other to, we accept each other's sort of individual life and needs and wants and all that sort of thing. And so we've sort of adapted really well, I think, to each other's needs and accept them, you know.
You say communication, Lane. What does that look like?
Well, diary meetings once a week just to make sure that we schedule time in for each other and understand where each other's going to be.
You sit down with your... What are you doing for lunch that day?
Wow. Yeah, so we have weekly diary meetings.
And we used to have a lot of little talks too. little talks to... to just to sort out issues, any issues we have with each other. And especially when we came together in one house. Lane moved me from the city, from Potts Point, which is, a thriving... It's like a little mini New York, really. and Lane was living on the beaches out here, and I said to Lane when we moved in together that I don't know if this is going to work,
Which is why he still holds on to that unit over there in the event.
No, I'm going to sell it. But you know, I said we'll give it a go and yeah, all that.
So just to put it into perspective, I mean, we've both lived on our own for a very long time, even though you've had partners and I've had partners, but we've both maintained a sense of individuality. And then when we moved in together, Kirk's very anal, very clean, very organised, very structured, and I'm a Gemini. I'm very free flowing. I'm very love variety.
Messy.
I'm quite messy. Well, I wouldn't say I'm messy. I have piles of stuff around the place, but I'm not. Yeah, I'm not as structured and organised as you. So it was quite a challenge for Kirk to accept that I'm not as.
It was more that I just couldn't put, you know, I couldn't cook in the kitchen because every flat surface in the house had your paperwork all over it. And still does.
That's a lie.
Are we allowed to air our dirty laundry now?
Take that back. See how clean the kitchen is?
No, I did. I noticed that this morning and I was going to commend you on that. Tidying up before our visitors came.
So, Kirk, as you and Lane, as you moved in together, you became, I guess, more. It sounds like you shifted more towards a place of being more aware of what you put into your body and what you're doing with your body and how that relates. When did you start, you know, kind of doing things like taking more regular physicals or more monitoring your PSA levels and things like that?
Yeah, look, it's a constant evolving thing, your health. And, you know, especially in this day and age when 1 minute something's good for you and the next minute it's not and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, you're constantly adapting and evolving what you do. But I think probably in my mid-40s started just to get an annual blood check on everything you could get checked. Because I'm the sort of person that wants to know and be organised and deal with it if it needs dealing with. I've had full blood tests and that sort of thing for over 10 years. And then about 3 years ago, I think, the PSA just lightly sort of started to go up a bit. And I guess two and a half years ago, my GP and I discussed it and we decided to, you know, shift that up to 6 monthly, and then it kept rising. I did sort of a fair bit of research and a lot of, you know, they say the PSA blood test for the prostate is not necessarily accurate, but certainly it can be and is an indicator. And so it started to rise quite significantly more. And at that point, we decided for me to go and see an oncologist. Is that the correct term?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And he suggested an MRI and if need be a biopsy, which I did, and did the biopsy and nothing showed up. And that was about 2 years ago. And then before Christmas last year, 2014, it rose significantly, sort of exponentially. So I had another MRI and a little black spot in the prostate showed up, and then the biopsy to check it, and sure enough, it was cancer, and it was fairly aggressive too. So the oncologist's immediate suggestion was, you know, removal of the prostate. I've always believed things are in your body for a reason. So, you know, I couldn't get my head around having my prostate removed. So we're actually heading away to New Zealand for about 10 days on a holiday after finding out that I had cancer. And so I did a whole lot of research on the internet as to, you know, alternative medicines and alternatives and diets. And there's so much stuff out there that I got completely confused and had no idea what, you know, really would work or wouldn't work. Anyway, we got back and met with the oncologist again, and he said, look, the only real option is to remove the prostate. So at that point I said, well, who's the best? And from there met with Professor Stricker out at St. Vincent's, and he, of course, said the same thing, got to remove the prostate. Luckily, the cancer that I had was only in the prostate, so by removing that, removed the cancer.
Can you take us back a few steps to when the PSA levels were starting to spike? Mm.
What kind of conversations did the two of you have about what those what that might mean?
I think I did let Lane know that the you know the PSA was still going up and we don't know what that means yet. And then of course after the first MRI and biopsy being clear, then you know I think certainly my thoughts were that well maybe just the PSA is you know inaccurate sort of thing. But I'm sure we discussed it, but not at any great level.
We discussed it, but because of the lack of scientific evidence based around the PSA test. Well, just the accuracy of a PSA test determining whether you have cancer or not, just both gave us that sense of restlessness about it. Like we weren't certain. So that uncertainty makes you question whether how accurate is it and is it actually do we have cancer and you know, does he have cancer and you just don't know. So it gets to the point where you just keep getting readings just to see if what it's doing. And, and Kirk's naturopath did give him some homeopathics that actually reduced his PSA levels. And at the time, because it was such a minor reduction, we didn't consider it to be of any significance. But now in retrospect or in hindsight, I look back and go, that was actually a really significant moment that those, by doing that so diligently for 3 months, you could actually reduce your PSA levels because it was at that point in time where it went from 7s up to 11. And from that scope, it's clearly indicative of prostate cancer. But because it was just this gradual increase, neither of us really thought that there was anything wrong. And then when the biopsy didn't indicate anything and the MRI didn't indicate anything, then we thought, well, obviously they're just poking around for no reason and causing the grief. And the biopsy is intrusive enough. You know, when you're urinating blood and all those things for several months after it, it's something you want to avoid as much as you can. So just the tests and the previous biopsy and the previous MRI basically indicating nothing gave us reason to believe that he didn't have prostate cancer.
So what was that holiday then in New Zealand like? Was it much of a holiday?
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, it was a black cloud.
It was intoxicating.
Yeah, and we actually went with our neighbours who are great friends, and it was basically a wine and food drive from Wellington to Auckland over 10 days. So every meal became my last hurrah and every bottle of wine became my last bottle of wine. But
Kirk was certain that, because we've just had a friend who was diagnosed with breast cancer and she's gone on the keto diet and so we were certain that Kirk was going to have to do that. So as far as he was concerned, this was his last hurrah. He was going to eat hot chips every day, drink a bottle of rosé every day, and basically retox his system because the minute he got home, he was going to have to detox 100% and go from full cold turkey. So every day was a celebration of Kirk's life.
Yeah. Let's stop at this winery.
Yeah, and this winery. Do you have rosé? No? Okay, next winery. So it was a rosé tour.
Yeah, it was.
But did you talk at all about what it might mean if those things came back positive?
Well, and we didn't know the extent of it either, really. That was the thing.
The first 2 days we actually didn't talk about it at all. We were both in denial. We were both in shock. And then that's when we decided it was time to start doing some research just to see what the options were, because the doctor basically emailed him and said, "You got prostate cancer, have a great holiday, see you in 2 weeks."
Yeah, pretty much.
Needless to say, he wasn't responsible for operating on you.
No.
But the thing was that with that lack
of... I wasn't actually going to go there, but anyway.
but with the lack of information, and you've got to have a really good relationship with the people that are delivering this information, because it's that uncertainty that causes all the panic. And that lack of information caused me a lot of heartache. Kirk has always been pretty pragmatic about it. He understands it. And fortunately, he's the kind of man that will do whatever it takes to get a proper outcome and a decisive, positive outcome. He's not going to stick his head in the sand and be an emu about it. So knowing that Kirk's got that attitude still instilled a lot of confidence in me, knowing that we'll overcome this.
Yeah, we'll get through it.
We'll get through it. But in saying that, from my point of view, just hearing that your partner has cancer just filled me with a sense of panic. And I was in denial of it for a couple of days as well, until one day I just snapped at my neighbour unnecessarily and she turned around at me and went, "I don't like the way you're talking to me." And so I sat back for a while and I kept asking myself, why have I snapped? Why have I lost control of my emotions? And it all came around to this fear that I hadn't really identified yet. And when I identified the fear, then I lost it and went into tears and then realised I was I was scared.
Mm.
Which is totally understandable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we both were because, I mean, really we had that sort of 10 days, maybe 2 weeks of not knowing whether it had spread out of the prostate, how, you know, where it was in my body, was it everywhere, was it, you know, so we didn't really know any of that information until, you know, we got back from New Zealand and then went and saw the email oncologist.
the oncologist.
And it was funny because we sat there with him and I had written a list of all these different things I'd found, you know, this amazing technology in Germany and this, you know, whatever. And every single one of them, he just sort of shook his head and said, there's no proof, you know, and just denied it all. And that annoyed us even more, you know. So, but thankfully he put us on to Professor Stricker eventually. And I'm sure the prior oncologist is good. Certainly he was very helpful up until that point. And you know, but we're, you know, very impressed with Stricker and his network and his whole...
It's also important for people to understand that it's okay to see another doctor if you're having... Because it's a big journey that you're undertaking with a particular surgeon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you're going to have to want to feel that you can trust them.
Yeah, very much so.
The great thing about Philip Stricker was obviously he's very experienced. He's done 5,500 of these operations and he very knowledgeable and he has a great team around you. So it's not like he says, all right, come in, get surgery and then disappears. You know, he stays in contact and...
And his support staff.
Yeah, he's got a real...
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Big support crew around him, physios and other doctors to support your recovery. I think from a partner's point of view, you do feel helpless. You feel like you can't do anything or help in any way. And then in...
Which is pretty much right.
Yeah, it's true. And that's even before you had cancer.
Yeah.
And then...
actually, in saying that, Lane was amazing as far as, you know, because I was pretty much bedridden for... the first couple of weeks and all that sort of thing. And I couldn't have asked for better support because I was probably a pretty out of it sort of demanding little sod for a couple of
weeks. Well, that were the nurses dealing with you. I didn't get that.
No, I mean when I came home.
Oh, yes.
How aware were you of what you would be going through after the surgery?
A fair bit, and that was the good thing about Philip Stricker's, you know, sort of a team, shall we call it. There's he has a lady that sort of looks after the post stuff and calls you every couple of days to see how you're going and all that. But yes, there was a plethora of information after the first visit as to what to expect. There's DVDs. There's actually a DVD of the robotic operation, so you can watch that, which we did. And so, yeah, there's a lot of information. I think probably because the result afterwards is different with every person, there's maybe not as much information as I would have liked in regards to your whole plumbing working properly again, bladder control, and obviously erectile function and all that sort of thing. That's all pretty much hit and miss and different with every individual. So, I mean, there's information about the different sort of good and bad things that can occur, but that's a bit of an unknown, and you've just got to have a really good, I think, good head about it, knowing that you've just had a massive operation, and it's completely stuffed around with that area of your body, and it takes time.
You both mentioned it, and you know you don't have to answer me. But I am interested.
No, I haven't had an erection.
Well, this is the thing. You know, you've got a clearly working relationship, and, you know, that's a part of anyone's healthy relationship.
Absolutely.
What are some things that, Lane, from your perspective, what's some things that people have to kind of bear in mind about expectations to manage during their recovery process? And, you know, it doesn't mean that he doesn't like me. It doesn't, you know, because that's, you know, there's so many triggers there, isn't there?
Yeah, you got to be realistic about it because, and there's a historical mindset as well, because it also depends on what is your relationship with sex in general?
So prior to
even meeting each other, and then the sexual relationship that we had before the operation compared to after. Is obviously extremely different because you can't. I mean, the benefit of it is that he literally can inject a needle into his penis and get an erection. Bam, we're going. So
it's awesome.
It's on call.
Well, in saying that, as what you know, Lane just said, there are a whole lot of things that they suggest you do, including taking small doses of Cialis every day.
Or Viagra.
Yeah, or Viagra, but the Cialis is their preferred option. And for me, after 3 or 4 months, I was, you know, still not getting an erection. And that was when they introduced the injection thing at least twice a week. But my suggestion to anyone out there really is do it all right from the onset.
Because
it's not about... you know, yes, it's great to be able to sort of have sex again, even though it's via the injection. It does way more than just that. It actually opens up all the blood vessels and teaches your penis to work again. So it's all important, you know, all of that stuff. Do it all if you want it to happen again, you know.
Thank you for sharing that, because this is a part of the conversation a lot of people don't have. They some people that I've heard of, they rush into the, I've got to get this cut out, not really considering what happens on the other side, particularly for people in a relationship.
Mm. Yeah. And what's been good too is that Lane has, Lane's attended most of the visits to all the different doctors and specialists and things that I've had to go and see since the operation and even before the operation. So she's been very much, you know, clued in and aware of, you know, what to expect and what not to expect, and been able to ask questions and all that. So, you know, it's been a journey totally together, and I think that's really important, you know, especially when in regards to, you know, the sex side of things, because that is, you know, it just wouldn't work if I went and came home and said, well, darling, we've got to do this. And she'd ask a lot of questions and why, and you know, and it just makes it difficult.
It's medicinal.
Yeah.
So they tell.
It's therapeutic, honey.
Yeah, but it's very important for your partner, I reckon, to be involved with, you know, as much as they can of the whole process and all of the doctor's visits and everything, just so that you both... You know what's going on.
And we know how men are with instructions, right?
Mm. Those things that I've put in the bin before I've even opened the box.
Yeah. Unless it's a flat pack.
Yeah, that's just IKEA.
Then you have to use
the spin. Yeah.
So for a lot of relationships, I mean, as you mentioned, after the surgery that you were bedridden, the time of life that this normally affects men is when they're fathers, when they're the role, you know, they have a kind of... a role in a lot of people's lives, and then suddenly they're this person confined to bed and, you know, plumbing's not working properly. And it might be a little frightening for the man to be like, now I'm being seen, I'm kind of weak right now and I can't do anything about it. And B,
I'm vulnerable.
Yeah. But also B, for the other people in life, like, oh, that energy's not there, how does the household work now?
Mm. Yeah, well, I don't eat.
Turned ours upside down.
Because my cook's gone. Yeah. My chef's in bed in hospital. So.
But mind you, look, I was only in hospital for, three to four days is what they normally, with the robotic surgery that I had. And then really they encourage you to start walking virtually straight away. So, yes, I was in bed a lot because, well, for the first 10 days I had a catheter.
I'm flinching over here because I had one. Yeah.
Didn't really feel like going out that much, so you know. Realistically, it was less than 2 weeks, and I was pretty much up and about, not doing anything majorly physical, but going for walks and all that sort of thing. And
walking up and down the hallway of the hospital.
Yeah, while I was there, but then when I was here, I'd walk down to Freshwater and get the mail and come back and stuff like that. So. You get going pretty quickly, to be honest, considering the extent of the surgery. And
I think one of the things we did underestimate with the surgery was the internal damage the internal alterations that have to occur for that prostate to be taken out, because they have to cut through your stomach lining, and they have to blow your cavity up full of gas to move organs around, and so you've got a whole lot of internal stitching as well as external stitching. So I don't think anyone really considers what effect that has on your body, and each person heals differently. So you've got to be patient and take the time to allow your body to heal. Some people who are super fit are up and running straight away, and then there are others that need to take the time to recuperate. So like I said, there's no one-size-fits-all policy, but it does come down just to common sense and giving your body time to heal, but then also making sure that you stay active and, as Kirk said, do the things that you know are going to give you the best chance of 100% success rate in the future. Because it is a really long-term game that you're playing here.
As you mentioned, you're only a few months into this. Yeah. Lane, what kind of things have you been doing outside to make sure that you're able to provide the best support, not only for yourself but also for Kirk?
So as a surfer, the one thing that keeps my life in perspective and keeps me happy is going surfing. So I had to make sure that I made the time to surf. Otherwise, I would have been a miserable sod. And so
I make her go and surf a lot of the time too.
Yeah, he does, yeah. If he sees me down and out, then he shuts my computer and says, go surfing, because it makes me happy. So definitely making the time to look after myself and also just making sure that I give myself perspective. And also when I feel afraid, then sharing that emotion and expressing my emotions and not bottling it up and pretending that it's all good and putting on this brave face. Like, who is it I'm trying to be brave for exactly? Am I trying to be brave for him who's just been through hell, or am I trying to be brave for everyone else's perspective? I mean, I am also allowed to be weak and vulnerable through these times. And the more emotion and the more that we share about how it's affecting both of us, the more support we can provide for each other. But I find that as people go through challenges in life, that they tend to isolate themselves. We all become silos or islands, and we don't want to either burden somebody down with our pain, or we don't want people to think that we're weak or vulnerable. And all that does is actually prolong the pain and suffering. So the sooner that you can take the time to acknowledge that things aren't okay and share that with someone and not judge it and not fear it and express it, the sooner you'll get past it.
Mm, absolutely. I agree with that.
Thanks.
Be responsible, for your body and your health,
Yeah.
I mean, one of the great things about the human body is it kind of tells you stuff if you're willing to listen, and certainly part of the whole, learning bladder control again if you do too much, then suddenly you leak, in your underpants or your pants, and you go, oh, I can't do it too much. So your body tells you when you need to slow down. And
if you're not listening, you will wet your pants.
Yeah. Yeah, but that, look, it's 6 months now, is it? March was the operation. And I reckon I'm doing pretty damn well, overall. And as Lane said, I am pretty pragmatic about it all, and willing to do what is necessary and everything that will help my sort of physical recovery. And I think so far I'm on track, which is good. Mm.
You're a very tight-knit unit, you guys. But surely you've been able to find support from your friends outside of the relationship.
Mm.
Yeah, we have. So definitely our friends, Kirk's naturopaths, who've been best friends with for 30-odd years, they've provided monumental support. We've also, we both go to a practitioner called an NET therapist, so a neuro-emotional technique. So it's a chiropractor, but it also deals with the emotional component of what's going on physically, because they're both very intertwined, they're very aligned, and if you just deal with one and neglect the other, then you'll continue to procreate the symptoms or the outcomes that you actually don't really want. So, we're very open and honest and communicative about things that are going on. We're patient, we're understanding, and it's okay to be scared. You know? So if we are in a state of uncertainty or feeling fearful, then we put our hand up and ask for help. We definitely don't ostracize ourselves. So yeah, we're very grateful for the abundance of support and expertise that we have around, especially in Australia.
Mm.
Now we're very, very lucky to live in a country like Australia where we have such tremendous medical support and an incredible medical system and pioneers like Dr. Stricker, who are out there just to support not only the men but the whole family unit and people going through these circumstances, because it's when we started speaking about it openly, it was remarkable to find out how many men actually have prostate cancer and how differently it affects people, and also the mental applications to it as well. So it's been a fascinating journey and one that I'm actually tremendously grateful for, because it's taught me a lot about us and
a lot of things.
Yeah, it's taught me a lot about life.
Mm. Wow, that you guys can find that perspective, reframe it as a positive of what it's given you.
Yeah.
Well, I
live my life, really.
Yeah,
it's remarkable.
It is.
A lot of people don't do that, though.
No, I know. Well, we don't play victims.
But then I had a very fortunate, and I guess it's, thankfully for my, as Lang called me, anal diligence with with blood tests and that.
OCD, mate.
I got to it early, and that's the big important thing. I got to the whole thing, thankfully, very early in its career, my cancer.
one-hit wonder.
Yeah, it was
one night only.
It was one night
only.
But I was very lucky at that point it was
Hendrix and the Monkees. Two shows and it's over.
Two shows. That's too many.
I'm pulling out the old ones, but that's for you.
Yeah.
But I was very fortunate that it was the cancer was only in the prostate. I mean, with other people, it spreads, and it would have with me as well. So I didn't have to have chemo or anything like that, because once they removed the prostate, it was gone. But with the whole prostate thing, there's so many different levels and factors and age and all that. I mean, I think statistically, in the end, most men die with prostate cancer. They don't necessarily
before it kills them.
They don't necessarily die of prostate cancer, but they die with prostate cancer. So it's extremely common, and that's kind of heartening in a way. In that you're not alone. There's plenty of other peeps out there that are dealing with it and have dealt with it and are about to deal with it. And it's fairly well looked after these days from a medical level.
Guys, speak up.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's your message to
people? That's my message. Yeah. Just speak up. Speak about it. Talk about it.
And just go and get a blood test. I mean, it's just
a
little prick in your arm for a couple of minutes. And then
just a little prick.
And then get a week later getting the results, and you'll know how you are, and it's a good thing.
There's my doctor calling me right now.
Well, that's probably a sign for us to get to wrap this up. So what are you going to do for Movember this year, Kirk? You've got one of the most iconic Mo's in our country. What are you going to do?
I
want to shave it off. Can I?
Well, I've obviously come on board with Movember as an ambassador. for the first time for me this year. So yes, we are going to shave my moustache off right at the beginning of November. And yes, I think Lane should do it. I think you should be the one.
I'm going to.
Which I have more fear of than. But I've had my moustache and whatever, well, 20 years on and off, but certainly it's been on my face for pretty much the last 11 years. So and it's going to be weird.
It's going to shave 5 years off your age too, I reckon.
Is it?
Yeah. You got this little baby face.
It's only superficial though, Lane.
You're being
superficial. So yeah, and then I'm going to get involved with the whole campaign this year. Fantastic. So I'm looking forward to that.
Because I think there's that whole that look right there on your face, that whatever you call it, moustache and flavour saver. I think that's what they call those things. Is that what they call it?
I think so.
Yeah, flavour saver. Yeah.
Flavour saver. That's called the pengilly. So
it is. It's got its own name.
It's got its own identity.
Yeah.
So. It's going to be interesting seeing you without the pengilly. Yeah.
In fact, we did a charity golf game up in Mudgee a year or two ago. And anyway, being, you know, celebrities, we were invited up and we were to go with different teams and whatever. And the team that bidded for me made T-shirts, and their T-shirts had like this logo, which was awesome. It was my glasses with a little mo, so no features, no eyes, no nose, no mouth. So it's just glasses and my little mo
that's
thing.
That's going to become his new logo.
And it was fantastic. So. Yeah,
that's your new logo. So if you ever get a job or do anything, use that logo.
Get a real job.
Yeah. Okay. Stop living on royalties.
Last two questions, mate. Living on royalties—that's the dream. Come on. Last two questions. What value? We'll ask these questions of everybody. The last two questions. What value do you appreciate most in your mates?
In my mates, I think honesty. Just being honesty, being honest and being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last question, if you could pick up the phone and call 18-year-old you, what would you say?
You should have done all those girls you knocked out.
Living in regret for the rest of your life, huh? How many of those girls?
Oh, there's about two.
Yeah.
I love you guys. Thank you so much for sharing with us. It's so wonderful that you would have us in your home. And
thanks for coming.
Thanks very much.
Good to see you.
You guys are great.
That was Kirk Pengilly and Lane Beachley. You can find them both on Twitter. Let them know you heard them here, and please support them during the month of Movember. It's a really special story, I'm sure you'll agree. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. I'm so glad I could bring you that conversation. However, it should never replace a conversation with your own doctor. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to listen to more episodes of the show, you can catch up at movemberradio.com, on SoundCloud, or in the podcast app of your choice. We'll talk to you next week. This episode of Movember Radio was produced by myself, Osher Gensberg, with Molly Hindman and Lavanya Nagendran. Audio production on this show was by Daryl Misson, and music was by the ever talented Toe Hider. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week. Talk to you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.